Thank you again, Brother Keith. So, brethren, it's a happy Sunday afternoon. It's again wonderful to be here with you and to spend this time together. And I'm going to speak about a subject today that is much different than the one that we talked about yesterday. Yesterday, we talked about more of a doctrinal, intellectual understanding of where we are in the stream of time and how we're supposed to look at the world and be watchers. And today we're going to talk about something a little bit more heartfelt. If you've heard some of my discourses before, you might have picked up that I have a somewhat of a fascination with some of the stories in the Old Testament and the lessons specifically that we learn from some of these lessons. So when we go into some of the stories that we've heard growing up, some of the accounts that we've heard growing up, and maybe even touched on, throughout our consecrated walk, there's oftentimes some huge lessons that are involved there that are really moving. And unless you stop and take some time, or more importantly, unless somebody accidentally brings it up to you or brings a thought to your mind, you may miss the lesson. And I keep finding that over and over again. And so there's a lesson in today's thoughts that I believe the Lord has given me that have been a huge blessing. And so I'm going to share my screen here and we will get started. And it's titled The Faithful Daughter of a Worthless Man. And it's about a judge and a sacrifice. And what I'd like to start with first is just to get everybody's mind primed to be in the throne room with God right now and to just bring our hearts before Him. I'm going to ask some questions that I think several of us identify with. And the first one is, have you ever felt rejected? Have you ever felt like you didn't belong, either intentionally or unintentionally, by others? Do you realize that you've been called to a higher purpose that others do not see, they don't know about? Have you ever given so much of yourself in your consecration that it hurt? Do you ever find it difficult to give up the flesh and some of your interests in the world? And if anybody says no to that, I think you're lying. It's designated, it's designed to be difficult. That's what makes it worth it. And have you ever been pleasantly surprised by the character of God? Has God ever shown you things through the scriptures or through your own personal experiences where you get to know Him better? And it's such an eye-opening, gratifying, and peaceful moment that it moves you. And that's what this story did for me. And I'm hoping that some of you have the same experience and can look at a story that, maybe, quite frankly, you've only heard or read once, twice, maybe even three times, and look at it in a different light that really impacts your walk with the Lord. So we're going to start with just a base thought. This is a framework or a structure that you find over and over again in the book of Judges in the Old Testament, right? It is a four-step repetitive cycle that you will see the Israelites go through. And we're going to take, just as an example, we go into Judges chapter 3 because this is where it discusses that cycle in about three scriptures. And it happens over and over and over again. Number one, Israel forgot the Lord their God and served Balaam in the groves. So they worshiped false idols. Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. So that's step one, happens many times. Step two, the Lord became angry and he allowed the enemies to come in. Step three, Israel, now that they're under oppression, realize that they've made a mistake. They realize that they upset the Lord and they cry for help. And then lastly, every time they cry for help, what does God do? He saves them. He delivers them. And he does it with a judge. And so it's no different when we come to Judges chapter 10. And in Judges chapter 10, we find that the Israelis again practiced what the Lord considered to be evil by serving the Baals, the stars, the gods of Aram, the gods of Sidon, the gods of Moab, the gods of I mean, it just feels like the gods of Ammon, it feels like if there was another god in the nearby area, Israel was eventually going to start worshiping it. I mean, take a look at the map and the circles around us. Those are the areas that these other false gods came from. It's almost like they are worshiping gods that come from every single side that their land is touching. In doing so, they ignored the Lord God and they wouldn't serve him. And so that's step one. And so step two, in his burning anger against Israel, he sold them into domination by the Philistines and the Ammonites, who trampled and troubled the Israelis during that year. 18 years for the Israelis who lived east of the Jordan River in Gilead, the land occupied by the Amorites. Then step three, the Israelis cried out to the Lord and told him, "We've sinned against you, and because we have abandoned our God to serve the Baals." And you can imagine that God says, "I'm aware. Yes, I noticed that you did that. I was waiting for you to realize it." And then in verses 12 through 14, God responds and he says, Didn't I already deliver you from the Sidonians and the Amalekites, the Maonites, when you cried out to me? But you've abandoned me and you've served other gods. And therefore, I will no longer be delivering you. Why don't you go and cry out to the gods that you've chosen for yourself and let them deliver you? And so you can see that God is not exactly happy, but he helps them anyway. And as we go through Judges chapter 10, the Israelis replied to the Lord and they said, "We've sinned, so do to us anything that's right in your opinion. Just please deliver us right now." And it says in verse 16 that when they put away their foreign gods and they served the Lord, then Israel's misery came to an end. The Ammonites were summoned and they encamped at Gilead. When you go through these tales that we read of, and that tales is the wrong word because tales makes it sound like it's made up, but these accounts is probably a better word. So when you go through these accounts, you find that it's a very common theme that it says they were summoned, that the enemies of God, they were brought together, and there's a symbolic meeting in there. They didn't just show up somewhere, they were brought, they were summoned. And so the Israelis assembled together and encamped near Mizpah, and the people and Gilead's officials inquired among themselves and said, "Who will begin our attack against the Ammonites? He'll become head over everyone who lives in Gilead." So that's the setting. That's where we start today's thoughts. And this is where Jephthah comes on the scene. And Jephthah, in chapter 11, verse 1, what we read is that Jephthah, the Gileadite, was a mighty warrior, but he was the son of a prostitute. Gilead was the father of Jephthah. And that's essentially where they were from. Now, as you go through some of these maps in the Old Testament, you'll find some different accounts of where they actually were. So we're going to say that he is from that area right there, circled around it, kind of north of Mizpah, southeast of Jabesh Gilead, somewhere in that vicinity. And as we see in verse 2, that Gilead had other sons through his wife, and when his sons grew up, they told Jephthah that he had to leave. He said, "You shall not have an inheritance in our father's house because you are the son of another woman." And so Jephthah, in verse 3, he fled from his brothers and he went to the land of Tob, and worthless fellows collected around Jephthah and went out with him. And so there's the land of Tob. So he leaves and he goes to this land of Tob. And this is where we get this phrase, worthless fellow. Other translations say vain fellows. Others say good for nothing men. But this word here means empty or worthless. It means cast out, to pour forth. So essentially, it's not that Jephthah was worthless. It says that other worthless men gathered around him because birds of a feather flock together. So essentially, what it's saying is Jephthah, who was this mighty warrior, because his mother was an adulteress or a prostitute or, you know, whatever it is that actually happened there. Because he was born from those circumstances, he's considered worthless and he's sent away. And the people that befriend him, the people that he becomes friends with, are other people that don't seem to have a whole lot going for them. He was made to feel worthless, and he was made to feel as an outcast. He didn't belong. He was cast out of his family, no inheritance. And I think he was the firstborn child, still with no inheritance. And he lived a life of shame. And of course, it wasn't from anything that he did. And therefore, the friends he made were likely others who felt like they were also outsiders, outcasts, who didn't belong. But soon after this is where the story changes. In verse 4, it says, after a time, the Ammonites made war against Israel. And when they made war against Israel, the elders of Gilead went to bring Jephthah from the land of Tob. And they said to Jephthah, come and be our leader so that we can fight among the Ammonites. And so you can imagine this conversation. Hey, we know that we cast you out, but you're a mighty warrior. You're really good at what you do. And now we'd like you to lead us to salvation. And he says, wait a second. Weren't you the ones that hated me and drove me out of our father's house? And that's where we also read, because again, Jephthah says this to the elders. So it wasn't just his own family. It wasn't just his brothers who, for I'm sure a multitude of reasons, some maybe being greed and some maybe just not liking the fact that he was born from another woman, they cast him out. But it seems like the elders of the community also got involved and said, you have to go. And he says, you've come to me now that you're in distress. And so we have this awkward moment. And I really love this translation from the International Version. It says, well, so again, Jephthah asks them, aren't you the guys that cast me out? And this translation gives it the impression of, well, you see what happened was, yeah, we did cast you out, but because there's this battle, now we need your help. And so now we're coming back. And Jephthah says, if you bring me home again, then you have to make me the head of the people and of the army. And they agree to it. And so he does. And what I find really interesting is that Jephthah, when he comes back into this land of Mizpah, the elders went with him to Gilead and the people made him head and lead over them. And then it says that he spoke all his words before the Lord at Mizpah. And so what I find really interesting about Jephthah is, again, we're living in a time when the Israelites were again unfaithful. Now, they've realized their error and they've asked for help, but they only asked for help and realized their error because enemies came in. And so that's the example, I think, that probably disappoints God the most. When things are going well, they don't need him. It's only when things are bad that they realize, oh, yeah, right, we're supposed to be humble and follow. But Jephthah here, who's been cast out, comes back to lead them. The first thing he does is it says he spoke all his words before the Lord at Mizpah. And so what I think that means is that he dedicated himself and his leadership to God, is that he bowed down before the Lord publicly and said, I will be your faithful servant. And that tells you a little bit right there about what kind of character Jephthah had and what kind of obedience to God he had. And this is not the only place it's going to show that. So then, to make a long story short, if you're reading the account in Judges 11, it goes through a lot of scriptures of communications back and forth with the king of the Ammonites. But the short, sweet, and simple message of it is, Jephthah writes him a letter and he says, why are you fighting us? And then they write him a letter back and they said, well, because when you left from Egypt, you took our land and we'd like it back. And then he says, well, wait a second. We were trying to walk through. We asked for permission to walk through. We asked for permission to walk around. And you not only wouldn't let us walk through or walk around, but then you actually attacked us when we were trying to just figure out how to get there. Anyway, it was a fair fight and it was lost and God gave it to us. And he says, if your God gave you a victory and gave you the plot of land, would you give it back? And so Jephthah says, we're standing our ground and we're keeping this land. It was given to us by God. And so now Jephthah makes a vow. And he says, if you will give the Ammonites into my hand, then whatever comes out from my doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the Ammonites shall be the Lord, and I will offer it up to you as a burnt offering. Now, you might be asking yourself, what does that mean? What does it mean, whatever comes out from the doors of my house? That is a really bizarre offer to the Lord. So let's talk about that for a second. This is some diagrams and pictures of what an ancient Israel house looked like. And you see there's a lot of double story in common with the different structures. And what's in common here that, of course, we wouldn't see today if you look especially down at the one on the bottom left, is that there are animals in the house. And so once you see that, and once you understand that was a common part of their culture, that animals oftentimes lived in the houses, in the first floor. Now it makes sense when he says, whatever comes first out of my house, I will sacrifice to you. So Jephthah crossed over to the Ammonites to fight against them. And of course, the Lord gave them into his hand. And so he went from Mizpah down there. And it says he struck from Aroer to the neighborhood of Minnith, the 20 cities, as far as Abel-Keramim, with a great blow. And the Ammonites were subdued before the people of Israel. He just went one after the other after the other. And so because he must have hit some major military milestones for them, that was essentially the end of the battle. And so now Jephthah is coming home. And as he comes home, remember, he has made this vow. Whatever comes out of my house first, as I approach my home, I'm going to offer up as a burnt offering. And so Jephthah approaches his house, and the first thing that comes out of his house is his daughter. It's his own little girl. And he is broken. And in verse 35, it says, as soon as he saw her, he tore his clothes. And he said, my daughter, you've brought me very low and become the cause of great trouble for me, because I opened my mouth to the Lord and I can't take back my vow. And so as we look at this setting, let's think about what was going through his mind. Well, what's going through his mind is, I vowed with the idea of a burnt offering, of sacrificing an animal. He thought, I have to sacrifice physically my own daughter. And the magnitude of that is, you know, keep in mind his family history. His daughter is all he had. He had no family. He had no parents. He had no relationship with his siblings. He's been cast out. Nobody cares about this man, of course, for the other worthless fellows that he befriended in Tob. He probably felt alone. And he was probably thinking, I can't wait until I have a family of my own. It'll have to be through my daughter, my only child. Now, what's the reality of it? And this is something that when I first read this story, I thought, my goodness, God wanted a human sacrifice. And it was one of my dear sisters that said, no, that can't be what God wants. And I believe that she was correct. So listen to his daughter's response. Again, his daughter was probably a teenager. And she says to him, my father, you have opened your mouth to the Lord. Do to me according to what has gone out of your mouth, now that the Lord has avenged you on your enemies, the Ammonites. And then she says, well, let's just for a second, you know, again, this is her immediate response. And just keep in mind, this is an excellent example of faith and of obedience and of submission. I don't think she knew about the vow he made, but he told her and she said, well, then that's what you should do. So she says to her father, let this thing be done for me. Leave me alone for 2 months that I may go up and down on the mountains and weep for my virginity, I and my companions. And this is a really interesting part of the story. If you've been wondering, where is this going? What is the point of this? This is it. God wanted her life as a sacrifice, not her death. That's why she said, let me go up and down to weep for my virginity, not to weep for me. You see, God wanted a life of sacrifice from her. And Jephthah didn't even realize that. Jephthah, this worthless man, this faithful warrior, this leader of the people, he gets back from war and these things happen. And I think he was immediately stricken with mind-bending grief because he thought he'd have to put his own daughter to death. And instead, she immediately realizes, he doesn't want to put me to death. He wants me in a life of sacrifice. And I think that when she said that, he immediately was relieved. I just find it amazing. This teenage girl knew immediately what God wanted, and Jephthah didn't. And in fact, even when I read this story, my first reaction was, wow, he had to put his own daughter to death. Her own faith is what comforted him. It's a pretty blessed and sobering moment when a parent is comforted by their own child. Parents are normally so used to comforting their children that when the tables reverse, it really hits you in the heart. And she represents the faithful followers of God who do his will like lambs led by the shepherd. She trusted the way of the Lord without even knowing what it was. And so let's talk about some of the lessons that we get from this. One is that God, time and time again, shows us how wonderful his character is. Jephthah wanted to offer a sacrifice that would bring death to an animal. And there's nothing wrong with that. That was the culture of the time. In fact, that's probably what any of us would have done if we were living in the land of Israel in that day. If we want the Lord to help us, then we want to show our gratitude. And that was the way they did it. They sacrificed an animal. But God wanted a sacrifice in this case that offered life, because she devoted the rest of her life to the Lord in his service and in the kingdom. I'll bet she's one of the ancient worthies that's working with mankind. So when we look at all of these events, you know, we start to ask ourselves, what do these things represent? What does Jephthah represent? What does his daughters represent? And, you know, there's probably a lot of different answers here that would work pretty well. I'm going to offer just a couple because they stood out to me, and this is essentially what they speak of, that Jephthah is a picture of consecration, most especially the beginning of your consecration. And the reason is, number one, he's unwanted by the world. Number two, he's chosen for a purpose. Number three, he's going to be used in the future to save those who rejected him. Number four, he vowed to the Lord, take whatever you want. And that's a really important point. And then five, he made a vow. And of course, he had every intention of carrying out this vow. And he did not waver from it. But he didn't fully understand the vow when he gave it, did he? And just like in the beginning of our consecration. So we'll dive into those purposes one by one in a few minutes. But the first one is, again, he's unwanted by the world. He's considered worthless. And I think that that's why the scripture is there. That's one of those things that when we read that he was surrounded, by worthless fellows, that's not the scriptures telling us that he was surrounded by genuinely worthless people. That's the scriptures telling us, well, that's how he felt. And so that's who he was around. And worthless doesn't mean really worthless. It just means thrown away. His own family and the elders of the town, they criticized him for having an undesirable start to life. And that reminds us of Psalms 51:5, born in sin, shapen in iniquity. It reminds us of the carcass of the goat that's burned outside the camp. The stench from when that happened was really not a very attractive thing to everybody who saw it. They probably thought, why would you do this? That smells terrible. Just like when they watch consecrated followers live their lives, that doesn't appeal to me at all. Secondly, Jephthah's chosen for a purpose. This was not by accident. This was designed. God had Jephthah and his daughter in mind long before. And so when you think about your life, if you've ever felt rejected or cast out, like you didn't fit in, especially when we're growing up, that can happen. And what we want to keep in mind is it wasn't rejection as much it was redirection from God. Our being rejected by others was designed by God to redirect ourselves to Him. And so the question that I'll ask you all is, how long do you think that God had you in mind? When did you first feel God's love and influence and pull, that gravitational pull that you felt towards the Lord, saying, this is what I love, this is who I love, and this is where I need to go? And then I want you to imagine what things had to happen in your life to lead you to the humility and the sacrifice of consecration. And so, again, it's hard being rejected, but it's a wonderful thought, instead of feeling rejected by others, that you feel accepted by God, and that God plans these events in your life to lead you to Him. Third is that He will be used in the future to save those who didn't want Him. And that's a pretty familiar story. Tossed out by your own family, only to save them later. Does that sound familiar? Does that remind you of Joseph in Egypt? Well, it reminds us of 1 Peter 2:12, where he says, have your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they may speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. And so there was no way for Joseph to know what was going to happen in the future. That's a gift that we have, though. And so when others do treat us poorly, if that happens, especially if it happens because we love the Lord, or if it just happens because, I think several people have had the experience where maybe you had some friends in the world and you changed the course of your life. And then when they realized that you couldn't be friends anymore, maybe they acted out against you in some unbecoming manners. We've got people who have left religious organizations and then been ostracized by their family. And can you imagine what it'll be like for them when they have that Joseph brother experience and they realized that while they might have been treating you unfairly or unkindly, that in your mind was like, I just love you and I'm not going to hold any of this against you. And in the right time, hopefully I can help you get to be as close to God as possible. The next lesson here, number four, is Jephthah says, take whatever you want. Take whatever you want. And his animals must have been important to him. And he says, I'm not going to tell you which animal to give. Sometimes we get the impression in the Old Testament that one of the mistakes that the Israelites would make is that they would offer the stuff to God that wasn't the best, that wasn't the choicest. And Jephthah says here, I don't even want to make that decision. I trust you and I leave it in your hands, and you can take from me whatever pleases you. And I think that's a wonderful idea of consecration. It's normal for us to try and choose what we offer, but only a really faithful follower offers anything that God wants. And lesson number five, he made a vow he didn't fully understand. He had absolutely no idea. There was no way that he thought to himself that the first thing that he could see could possibly be his own child. And it turned out to be much more of an ask than he thought of, than he anticipated. But I think what's really impressive about Jephthah is as difficult as this was, his mind was, a vow is a vow, and I'm going to keep it. The vow cost him what was most important to him in the world. And then we come to Jephthah's daughter. And I think that this is a picture of a more developed portion of your consecration. Right? And again, I don't know if that is 100% accurate, but I'm going to share with you a few of the thoughts I have on this. And again, what's great about, you know, these discussions is that sometimes there is no just one definition as to what it means. And maybe it's not intended that way. Maybe it's intended for us to just think about it and consider and ask the question, how do I be the most consecrated person that I can be for God? And how can this lesson help me do that? And how can it help me help those that I love do the same? She understood God's heart and desires. I think, again, the spiritual maturity of this young lady is unbelievable. She had faithfulness to God in mind, and she remained nameless. And so I'll tell you why I think these things might represent a more developed consecration. Number one, she understands God's heart and desires. I think this is so impressive. She knew that God wouldn't want a human sacrifice. You know, when you think about it, Jephthah, you know, he's like Joseph. He's also like Abraham. There have only been a couple of times in the scriptures where God has said, I want you to sacrifice to me your child. And of course, he's never wanted a sacrifice that involved killing them. In fact, in Jeremiah 32, I want to say it's either 25 or 35, he says, it never even entered my mind that you should offer your children in the fire, right? Compared to what the Israelites were doing with the god Moloch. And she knew this. And I think that was really impressive. That the minute she heard that she was going to be a sacrifice, she said, oh, I know what that means. Two, she had faithfulness to God in mind. Look, I want you to imagine your life at any single point of it, and somebody comes to you with a message that changes everything, changes your job, changes your day-to-day, changes where you live, changes of that level of magnitude. Would you be willing instantaneously to accept any message or any change that came from God? And she did. There was no preparation here. There was no heads up. It was sudden. It was life-changing. And because it was from the Lord, it was accepted. I think that's an example of a mature, consecrated follower. And then third, she remained nameless. And again, sometimes it's not the thing that God says, it's the thing that he doesn't say that give us a greater impression of how he thinks. She's never given a name. Does that strike anyone as odd? There's not a lot of famous characters in the Bible that have no name. And I think it symbolizes that she was without her own identity. I think it symbolizes that in this picture, she was a follower of God and had no identity of her own. And it reminds me of Revelation 2:17. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna, and I'll give him a white stone. And in that stone, I'll give him a new name written, which no man knoweth, saving he that receiveth it. And so I think that the symbol in this picture is that she didn't need a name, that symbolically she was waiting for her name to be given to her by the Lord. And I think in that aspect, it could be symbolic of a consecrated follower. So a couple of more lessons here before we wrap up. One of them is about treating each other well. You know, how many times do we as humans need to be told not to judge other people, but to love and accept them? How many stories are told when someone's not appreciated until they turn out to be useful? Does someone have to be useful to us in order for us to follow the Lord's commandment? The common theme here that we see about humanity is to look at people who aren't of any benefit to us, or who aren't attractive to us, or who aren't the same color as us, or who aren't in the same financial caste system as us, or who wasn't born to a nice family as us, or who isn't as smart or intelligent or beautiful or any of those things, as well spoken, if they're not those things, they're not as valuable to me. That's human behavior 101. And we've seen it from the beginning. And so we see this example where, again, this is an extreme example, only happens a handful of times ever, where this person that they called worthless was appreciated only because he saved their lives. When are we going to learn the lesson that we're not supposed to wait for someone to do something for us before we appreciate them? We're supposed to take our time and our effort in advance to appreciate those who, quite frankly, maybe don't do anything for us that would make us feel naturally like appreciating them. The thought there for me is, when you see somebody who doesn't feel appreciated, do something about that. Here are some things that we know of Jephthah and his daughter. Is one, animals must have been important to him, but he put it in the Lord's hands to see which one he wants sacrificed. Do we ask the Lord at any given time, what is it that I think might be too important to me right now that I should just give to you and let you do with it what you want? He had a very strict sense of obedience. You know, how many of us would have thought, we see our daughter coming out the door and we think, okay, that's no, there's no way. There's no way. There's no way that he wants her, right? I'll wait for the second thing I see to come out the door that's an animal, because I had an animal in mind, and therefore God must want an animal. He had such a strict sense of obedience that when he saw her come out, his faith kicked in and said, this has got to be from God. And again, he's like Abraham. He was willing to sacrifice his only child to the Lord. He must have taught his daughter how to be obedient and love the Lord, because she was immediately obedient. Can you imagine? And I'm not here to knock any generation of sons or daughters, but I mean, realistically here, right? Honest talk. How many of you know a teenager that if your dad came up to you and said, hey, no marriage for you, no boyfriends, you're going to sacrifice the rest of your life to the Lord, how many of them would say, yeah, okay, that's fine? It's so impressive. His daughter understood what he did not, that God would not want a human sacrifice, but rather a sacrifice of her life in service. And Jephthah would never have the family that maybe he wanted to. So, concluding thoughts. Hate the sin. Hate the sin, but love the sinner. Don't hate somebody for the things that they can't control. If you see someone that doesn't look appreciated, make them feel appreciated. And trust the Lord our God. This is such a magnificent story, because it truly takes all of our faith to run into a situation like that and give up our lives completely in the Lord's service. You don't have to know what the Lord is going to do. You just have to trust that he knows, that he's doing it, and that everything is going to be more than fine to a degree you could never anticipate. May the Lord add his blessing.